Welcome back to the FKT Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Join me today as I talk with Mark Kelly, who recently set the supported FKT for the 215-mile-long New England National Scenic Trail. He traversed the distance in 3 days, 17 hours, and 45 minutes. Tune in to hear how stand-up paddleboards and elevators come into play while he traversed this hidden gem of New England. Hi, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to chat with you.
This is really cool. I'm excited to talk about the NET.
Yes, the NET, the New England Trail, one of the lesser known national scenic trails with some unique challenges and differences. I'm guessing most of our listeners that are outside the Massachusetts, Connecticut, New England area probably aren't super familiar with it. So I was wondering if you could just briefly describe the trail, what it's like, where it starts and ends. Just give our listeners a picture.
It's a blue and white blaze trail system that, if you want to follow it all the way up, it can actually connect all the way to the top of Mount Monadnock in New Hampshire, which I believe is one of the most hiked mountains in North America, believe it or not, because of its accessibility to New York and Boston. But the NET in total starts south of Monadnock at the New Hampshire-Massachusetts border, and it runs right down through the center of Massachusetts, through Connecticut, and it ends right at the ocean, the Long Island Sound in Guilford, Connecticut. It's about 215 miles, and even living here for my entire life until about 10 years ago, I didn't know this trail system existed in the middle of southern New England. You would think New Hampshire, Adirondacks, and of course all the Maine, Katahdin, and all that stuff. But unbeknownst to most people, there's a great trail right through the center of southern New England. It's rocky, it's rooty, it's technical, it's got some beautiful overlooks that overlook some pretty cool farm country or small towns. It's got some really boring sections that end up crossing a lot of streets, but it's also really accessible for a lot of people. So it's great. You can get out for a 5-6 mile section between roads and turn it into any number of wonderful adventures, including a 215-mile journey across both states.
Probably some of our listeners are more familiar with the Appalachian Trail. So where is the NET in relation to the AT?
So the AT cuts through the northwest corner of Connecticut at cuts off the corner at a 45. So it's probably an hour east of the AT. And the AT actually never comes close. The AT, of course, runs up at a 45 degree angle all the way through Massachusetts into Vermont, New Hampshire. And the NET, the New England Trail, starts south of the AT and just runs directly south from New Hampshire, the border, right down through Connecticut.
It's easy to forget that the primary direction of the AT, especially further north, is northeast, not straight north. It's angling, because Maine is way out there into the ocean comparatively to the southern AT. You mentioned, rocky and rooty, but occasionally flat, but you also mentioned there are overlooks. So what's the elevation change like on this? Are we talking lots of little small hills? Are we talking big climbs? You obviously mentioned Mount Monadnock. So are there big mountains? What kind of elevation are we doing?
No big mountains, no. It's nothing crazy. You're not going to hike for 3 miles uphill. It's nothing amazingly long, but it's been said to be death by 1,000 paper cuts. It's
okay.
Constant up and down and up and down and up and down. I mean, according to Garmin, I got about 39,000 feet of climbing in 215 miles. So it's nothing insignificant.
Right.
But I don't think any individual hill is more than 800 feet, maybe. Mm-hmm. So it's not crazy. You're done within a mile. So it's manageable until your feet start to hurt and it's been a few days and you're tired and you just don't want to do it anymore.
I think anybody who's hiked much in the East knows what that's like. You're either going up or you're going down. It's never anything else.
It's like everything else here. Don't get used to it because it will change.
Right, exactly. So when I was looking at your trip report on our website on Fastest Known Times, I noticed that this was your first multi-day FKT and really only your second FKT on the website in general. So what made you decide to tackle 215-mile supported FKT as your second FKT?
Really good friends, a few too many beers hanging out with friends, and just wanting to I don't know, just adventure a little bit, do some more cool stuff. I'm not getting any younger. I'm on the short side of life if I'm looking at the grand scheme of things, and I want to keep enjoying myself and playing outside. There's a unofficial kind of race in Connecticut where it's like a hybrid FKT slash trail race. It's called the Cut 112, and it does the border of Connecticut in Mass down to the ocean in Guilford. It's about 112 miles, according to the CFPA, Connecticut Forest and Parks, and it's the same end of the net trail. I've done that. It's no aid stations. There's no any kind of actual organizing other than the guy puts it together, Art Byram, who did the whole thing himself and thought it was a really cool idea. He tells you basically, get your own crew, get your own food. Here's a map. Here's some logistics help. And then the day starts and everybody just meanders and makes their way to the shoreline, some faster than others, which makes it the race aspect. But you have to figure out your own food, your own logistics for getting to the start to the end. Are you going to have people pacing you? Are you going to have friends help out? So it had that same vibe. Meanwhile, I've done that a few times. I had a lot of fun. My wife and my daughter are my crew, along with a couple really close friends who jump at the opportunity to help. Well, when you look north of that Cut 112, it's the continuation of the New England Trail. So it started to look interesting. Like, okay, I can do this 112, but what can I do if I go longer? Can I go longer? On the FKT site, there weren't a lot of efforts on it, so it made me start to think about it. And then to gamify it a little bit, I thought, well, what if we could do it and time it so that we actually got to the start where other people were going to do this other event? If I could get there on time and then run, hike, spend time with them, it would be even cooler. So that became the game, planning it out, strategizing it, seeing how we could get from New Hampshire down to the border of Mass and Connecticut in time to be a part of this next thing, kind of get some of that energy, and then can I finish that other event? So that's really where it came from. The impetus was that. And on top of it, the race director told me that a few people have tried. Nobody's gotten to the start, let alone finish the whole thing.
Oh, wow. So you were the first. That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's a lot of logistics and unknowns because you're doing what, like 112 miles or something leading up to?
Yeah, it's a little, I want to say it may be a 105. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's basically a 100-mile warm-up before a 100-mile race.
Right. And a lot can happen in that chunk of time. So yeah, trying to hit a precise mark, that's pretty challenging. So let's talk about some of those logistics. You mentioned your wife and your daughter and a couple of friends were crewing you. Did you have pacers? Were you running alone most of the time or with other people?
It started with two of us that were going to try the whole thing together. My friend Tyler and I decided we were going to attempt this whole thing. So it was us two. I rented a van, a little Fiat Volkswagen Westphalia kind of camper van. And a good friend of mine, Stefan, offered, he's game for anything. He offered to drive from road to road. Oh, he's a great friend. He'll help anybody do anything. He offered to drive from trailhead to trailhead, which is every 5 or 6 miles for however long it took us. And he doesn't know if that's, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days. Do we give up? But along with that, my wife and my daughter love the adventure too. So they come along. And of course, having them with me, it's just an emotional boost. So we all got together, started planning it, and they were going to meet us at every, 5, 7, 10 miles, depending on how long the section is, we could resupply. And then we just keep going on. And then we had to plan, what are we going to do for sleep? Are we going to sleep? Are we just going to go until we crash? Again, all unknowns. I didn't know what to do. It was thought out, but there were so many things I haven't done yet that made it really fun. And on top of that, there's two river crossings. One of them is the Connecticut River, and it's not swimmable from one side to the other side where we went. It's just shy of 2 miles, so it's about 1.8 miles. How are you going to get across that? You can do a run around it on the bridges, but that adds about 10 miles. And then there was the Westfield River, which I guess during a drought, it might be crossable. But when we got through at night, it was not walkable. So we had to find logistics for that as well. The Connecticut River, there was a previous attempt Scott and Debbie Livingston had done the unsupported FKT, and Scott has a great write-up about what they did. Well, they wanted to do it human-powered, so they used kayaks, and I thought that was really cool, but I wanted to do my own thing, so I talked Tyler into doing stand-up paddle boards, so we'd have our own flair on it. So that's what we did. We got to the Connecticut River. My wife and daughter inflated our stand-up paddle boards, and Tyler, for the first time in his entire life, did a stand-up paddleboard down the Connecticut River. And he did awesome until he fell in with 3 feet to go trying to get out. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Wow. Stand-up paddleboarding is not exactly that easy to do on your first try.
It's not natural. So he aced it, let alone in a moving current of a river. So
maybe that's the key to, you know, acing stand-up paddleboarding. You got to do a 75, 80 mile warm-up.
Tire yourself out so you're not, right. You don't care.
So you can't overthink
point.
It. You yeah. just get on.
You're a little loose, yeah.
So for the official net, are you supposed to cross the rivers there? That just seems like such a poor planning on a trail's part to put unknown fordable rivers.
That's Southern New England. You take what you're given and you make do with what you can. So the first guy that ever did it, Lee, when he posted the trail report, I believe he actually ended up getting a ride from one side of the river to the other, and just, you know, kind of said, it is what it is.
Okay.
We'll figure this out as we go. So that's why I liked when I read about the Livingston's adventure. That's what I thought was so cool. They did it human powered, kept it as part of the trail, went from the end of the trail down to a local small marina where it's really privately owned, knocked on the door, asked for permission. They gave permission, and then they just floated down the river to the exit point, which is a boat ramp, which is about a half to three quarter mile from the next trailhead. So it actually logistically works out really well if you can use the mm-hmm. river. And it's fun. It just adds another piece of adventure to the trail. How many other right. trails or FKTs are going to have a 2 mile river paddle or whatever? Unless you want to run around, but I didn't want to.
Yeah, I don't blame you. You mentioned there was a second unfordable river. What did you end up doing there? Did you sup that too?
Well, no, because that's not suppable. So we had a lot of rain. During our first night, it rained heavily. So that river became unpassable. A friend of mine who surprised us, who was going to come out and meet us, started to ford the river with a flashlight at night with a stick, got up to about his belly button and realized he was going to get taken down river. So he cautioned us against it. And we ended up taking about a 3.5 mile detour around the river. It was unsafe. And even to try and paddleboard it, you would have ended up three towns over. That water was moving fast.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So we ended up just running around.
At least it wasn't super far to go around.
No, it was doable.
So you mentioned high water because of rain. Was it raining during your FKT? What was the weather like? What kind of challenges did the weather present? I feel like the weather always presents some challenge.
It does. Fortunately, I am a very lucky person in a lot of aspects, and I can't even begin to tell you all the luck I've had and fortune I've had. But the weather held out pretty good, considering in New England, you could have anything from cold to 95 and muggy in the middle of May. You could have ice potentially, you could have whatever. But we had gorgeous first day until about midnight, and then it just opened up and it rained from midnight straight till about noon the next day.
Wow.
We did have some down hours. We took about I don't know if that was a 3 or a 4 hour break that first night. We took a nap, got back up, and all of our stuff was wet. Had to put on wet shoes or change shoes. I think I changed shoes, but had all our wet clothes on and just dealt with it for the next 6 hours of rain. But then the sun came out, it got nice, and actually the weather wasn't bad at all other than that rain. Even the next day, it was sunny, not too hot, probably, geez, I don't even know. I was out there so long, I can't remember what day was, what it was like, but I remember it not being that bad. We were really lucky, and so much so that at the end of it, I actually had, for the last 4 miles, I had to have a sweatshirt on because I was actually getting chilly from both the effort temperature-wise, so it was ideal.
Yeah, it's like the crux comes right at the beginning, survive this downpour for 12 hours.
Like, does anything else get through it, right?
Exactly. You can get through that. You can get through the rest. You mentioned taking like a 3 or 4 hour nap. And at the beginning, you were talking about not really knowing what your sleep strategy would be. So did you have a plan? Did you stick to the plan? How did it work out? Because I know one of the things about the net is there's no camping. You can't set up a tent and camp out. So how did you end up handling sleep?
They do have a couple of actual tent sites now, so you can camp. There are a couple shelters and there's a couple Boy Scout camps and you can register for them. I'm not a good planner. I like to wing it and kind of figure it out as I go. But thankfully, the partner I started with, Tyler, he's more regimented. He's an intelligent human being who makes smart decisions. Let's put it that way. So Tyler wanted to have a good chunk of time taking a break every so often. And it worked out where we thought it would be every 50, 55 miles, we could take a break, catch a nap, see how long that goes. And also along with that, we gave ourselves 45 hours to get to the start of Connecticut, which would be the start of the next section or next state and that other event. So we had 45 hours to play with. So depending on how fast we moved, that would give us more or less time to rest, sleep, catch up. So that's what we did. We got to about 3:30 in the morning and decided after all the rain, being a little bit tired, let's catch a good night's little rest. And I want to say that was 3 hours, 4 hours. I don't remember. And that next day, move as smart and as fast as we could to get to the next stop, which was the Connecticut board with the next event. And whatever time we got there, because that event was going to start at 8 a.m. on Friday, however much time we got there was our next rest. So if we moved good, we'd have longer rest. If we moved poorly, we'd cut into our rest time. So that was the strategy. And it was a smart strategy, honestly, because had it not been for Tyler's brain power, I probably would have gone until I bonked and then probably would have had enough energy in the second or third day.
So how much rest did you end up with before the start of the cut?
I want to say it was 6.5 to 7.5 hours maybe total. I didn't really break it out that well.
That's a pretty good chunk of rest.
Well, the idea was to get it all then and then finish the cut with everybody with as little as possible. And I think I took a 2 hour downtime there.
So you mentioned Tyler, that he started out with him, but you're the only one on the website with the FKT. So did he get lost out there? Like, did he get hurt? Like, where is Tyler? What happened to Tyler?
Tyler's doing great. Tyler is A-okay. Tyler's currently enjoying some trails in Arizona. Lucky him. But unfortunately, day two, Tyler really started to develop an issue with the back of his leg, the upper calf below his knee, and it started to really wear on him. About 140 miles in, he was really starting to struggle, and that pain was not going away. It was getting worse. So he ended up calling it at about that time. But like a true friend, we absolutely refused to let him call it, and we forced him, after sitting there for quite a while, we forced him to do the next 2.8 miles or 1.8 maybe. I can't remember. But we forced him under duress to do those next miles to see if maybe a little ibuprofen, a little food, a little slow moving would make it feel better. It didn't. In fact, I think he was probably upset about that for a while, but it never got any better. So he did pull the plug right around 140 miles.
Okay. So he did all of Massachusetts and a good chunk of Connecticut.
Yeah. He got I would say it was probably a little over a third, maybe 3/8 of the way. He made it to about Farmington, Connecticut.
So we've talked a little bit about sleep. We've talked about the weather, the logistics, the river crossings. What about fueling? What were you guys eating out there?
At first, it was really regimented. I was using Scratch for electrolytes. So I had 2 5-milliliter soft flasks and a vest. Each of them had Scratch in them for the electrolytes in the water. I had a soft flask of Scratch in my pocket and a handheld I had in the other pocket that was a soft flask as well. And in that one, I ended up using Morton because I found the Morton 320. So I'd have good calories in it along with the electrolytes. Started doing that for every 6 miles. I would try and drink as much of that as I could. And then every second or third road crossing, which ended up being somewhere between 9 and 12 miles, I have a little bit of real food. So we would do ham and cheese wraps, turkey wraps, or hummus wraps with other kinds of things and try and do that. And then eventually we just devolved into hamburgers and egg sandwiches and bacon and whatever my family and my friends were willing to bring and cook, we would devour it. And as the days wane, your appetite it comes and goes. You don't crave certain things after a while. And honestly, after the second day from drinking all those electrolytes, my tongue was swollen and it was hard to deal with all that salt on my tongue. Right. So I noticed I was having a hard time speaking. So I started to do more water and real food just to make it easier.
I've had that with electrolytes and sugar, both just makes everything kind of swollen in your mouth. And yeah.
That was a new one for me. I haven't been drinking electrolytes long enough or been out there long enough to know that that's a thing. It's a new learning experience. Yeah. Like, oh,
now you know.
I got to prepare for this or do this differently now.
It's interesting because I like hearing different people's experience when we talk about multi-day events, because some people start out and they're eating lots of real food. And then by the end, they're like, all I could do is liquid calories. And then there's people like you who started out with predominantly maybe liquid nutrition. Yeah. And by the end, you're like, give me hamburgers. It's very interesting. Bodies are so different. People are so different.
It really is. And to read other people's reports and see what they do and talk to them, yeah, everybody's so different. What works for one does not work for another.
Yeah, so much trial and error for sure.
So much error for certain.
Yeah, definitely more of them than the error side for some of us. So what kind of advice would you give if somebody wanted to come out and do the net, whether for an FKT or just to come out and hike it?
Be prepared for the rocks and the junkiness of it. There are some fantastic spots of the net. I wish more people in society knew about the trail. I kind of don't because it's not that busy. So selfishly, I like to be out there and have the trail to myself and have that time. But really, it's so close to all the major cities in central Connecticut. And it goes right near Springfield, Mass, and some other bigger towns like Holyoke. It's so nice. It's manicured. It's really well marked. People take a lot of time and care into making sure that you can find your way on these trails. There's nothing insurmountable about it. You don't have to climb a 14er. You don't have to be in the whites and deal with Mount Washington weather or the Prezies. It's super manageable for anybody. And it's very rewarding. There's so many spots that you can go and just hit up a 3 mile loop or take your kids up to a viewpoint and overlook, and there's birds just hovering in the up currents and little farm towns. It's so rewarding. And then you can come down off trail and there's an ice cream place within like 5 miles that you can go have a rewarding
That's
ice cream
the
after.
Perfect trail.
Yes, it's great. Or a brewery or a winery. But as far as FKT, definitely hit it early fall before the leaves fall, because it does get really, you get a lot of leaves on trail. Or I would say get it done before it gets too humid, because it's just relentless. It's one of the tough parts about it. It is too easy to bail, because if you're the middle of any given trail, you're 3 miles from a road. It's very easy to call an Uber. It's very easy to get family. If I'm local, I live here. The trail's 2.5 miles from my house at one point. So it's very easy to say, this sucks. I want to go home. Whereas if I'm in Harper's Ferry, what am I going to do? It's a lot different. If I'm in the middle of the presidential range, I've got to get out, and it's hours or, you know, many miles. It's not the same. The net, got to be prepared to willingly suffer it out for a little while, because you can go home very easy or go to civilization very easy.
Definitely like a mental challenge more than maybe physical in some ways. So the trail's 2.5 miles from your house. Did you want to go home?
No.
How hard was it to keep going there?
From day one, I was fully invested the whole way. The only thing that was going to take me out was an injury. So fortunately, you know, knock on wood, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Having somebody there with me really helped me with Tyler through the first 140 miles. Because you had somebody to just be around. I do not like the woods at night alone. I am not a fan of the woods. I don't care about bears or moose or deer in it. I'm afraid of axe murderers, werewolves, and vampires for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of those in New England. So
it was great having Tyler. Plus, once somebody's with you and they do drop, I mean, let's be honest, part of it is ego. Like, okay, I'm finishing this now. I want to be done to prove to myself, to prove to others that I can do it as best I can. And of course, you know, ultimately, yeah, I wanted to set the FKT. We talked about it, wanted to go after it and put a time down. And it was a trail where it's not hotly contested. I don't have to worry about right now somebody coming along who's an absolute stud and just laying down a time that I couldn't imagine doing anyway. So it's fun to do it on a lesser known trail and be part of the conversation of an FKT. It's really awesome. It feels good. Yeah. So at that point, I wasn't letting anything stop me. And my wife and my daughter are absolute savages. So they wouldn't let anything stop me. They're my biggest fans. It's awesome.
That is awesome. So you mentioned werewolves, but was there any wildlife encounters?
Yeah, northern Massachusetts is a haven for porcupines.
Oh.
We saw porcupines, and I think 8 porcupines that first night. We were talking about it. We didn't see wildlife all day long. Suddenly the sun goes down.
8 porcupines is my lifetime total of porcupines.
Honestly, I had seen 1, maybe 2 porcupines before that. I saw 8 that night. It was incredible. Other than that, just the usual squirrels and stuff. I don't think we saw a deer. We saw a moose on the trail when we did a trial run about a month earlier. We saw a moose.
Okay.
But, oh, you know what was really cool? So we were getting close to the end, and it was me and I had a couple of pacers, a couple of good friends just taking me through the woods. And it was dark out, and we saw a raccoon. But it ended up being like a juvenile raccoon, and it was about eye level on a tree, and it just stopped there. The next tree over, there was another raccoon. Eye level on a tree, stopped there. As we looked around at these trees, there was like a half a dozen raccoons just frozen, and they were all like juveniles or young ones, and they all kind of froze in our headlights. Yeah, like a family group. But it was wild because we went over, and we actually reached around the tree, and I probably shouldn't have, but we all touched the raccoon hands and feet in the back like they were just there. It didn't seem real. And I hope I wasn't hallucinating at that point. I don't believe I was because the other guys have told the same story. But yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, when raccoons are in trees, they don't move. They're just frozen. They just hang out there.
I had no idea. I've only seen raccoons walking across the lawn or attacking trash bins. I've never seen them at a tree before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen that many raccoons in a tree before. I usually just see like one, but no bears because, I mean, Massachusetts actually has a good number of bears.
I did see a bear. I'll be honest. I saw at one point during the cut in the morning, my daughter started slapping my arm and pointing behind me because she couldn't get the words out. Mind you, my daughter's 18, so it's not like a 6-year-old. She's slapping me, telling me to turn around. As I turn around, there was a black bear walking across the street. But to your point, I've seen bears so many times on the trail. It's almost like normal. You expect to see bear on these trails. They're in everybody's kitchen, on everybody's porch. The news is constantly talking about the bears on bird feeders and all that.
My favorite is the bears that get on the swing sets and they're playing the swings.
Or the cots or hammocks and they're laying there like they're lounging on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah,
I love it. I'm just like, okay, I know we shouldn't have them habituated in our yards, but that's also really hilarious.
It is really is, yeah.
Yeah. So I like to wrap it up with one last question, and that is, what was your highest high and your lowest low?
So the weird part about this is the highest high, lowest low kind of came simultaneous, I would say, and was right at the end. I was really struggle busing the last 4 miles around road to get down to the ocean. Oh, there's also an elevator on this FKT, in case you didn't know.
Oh.
Fun fact, as part of the cut, you have to cross over the railroad tracks that go through Southern Connecticut, right by the shoreline. There's railroad tracks that go through New York up to Boston. You have to get over the railroad tracks. In order to do that, as part of the cut, you take an elevator up, you cross the crosswalk, and then you go down to continue on the trail.
I'm pretty sure that's the only National Scenic Trail with
an elevator.
That's a cool, fun fact.
You got to take a river crossing, and if you make it fun, and then you got to take the elevator. Nobody else is going to have those in their FKT, I'm pretty certain.
The net really does have it all. Ice cream and wineries and breweries and elevators.
Come to Southern New England.
Wow. I mean, I'm putting this on my list.
But yeah, so coming into that area, my joints were aching like I've never felt before. So I was really struggling to keep going. At the same token, when I got to the water and dipped my hands in the water, knowing that I had finally got to the end and we made it and we made this thing happen, it was such a relief at the same time that it was like all congealed. Like the pain was real. The journey was over, which was sad because it was a lot of fun having 3, almost 4 days with my family and friends just doing our thing. The stories, the laughing, the all that stuff was now come to a close. So it was sad, but same token, we set the FKT. So it was elation. and exhaustion all at once. So it's probably the same at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, that makes total sense. I feel like the end of things that are intense and you're invested in are always really bittersweet.
Yeah. Makes you want to go back, just not the next day you didn't feel that way.
Right, maybe a few weeks away.
Yeah.
Months. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting all things net with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you for having an interest in such a small area. It was really cool to talk to you.
Thanks again, Mark, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKT on the website fastestknowntime.com and find out more about the net at newenglandtrail.org.